boy, you work your way down into the list, and there's some just crushers in there. But it was reassuring. I mean, I guess in a way, when I'm looking, then they have the list of CEOs. And these are guys that golf a lot, because they don't have to tour with a boy band. They have a lot of time to golf. But they're almost all kind of my age bracket. And they're very, very good golfers. And the interesting thing about being the interesting thing is that the Wall Street Journal a couple years ago, and I don't know how many of you remember this story, they did a very cool thing. I live near a town called Vero Beach, Florida, which has so many golf courses, I can't even name them all. But apparently this is a mecca for corporate America to come golf. And so the Wall Street Journal got the FAA records of all these corporate jets and looked at all their trips to Vero Beach, which the shareholders of these corporations paid for. And then they got on the USGA Handicap Index site, and they looked up, because when you play golf, if you know this, if you're a golfer, if you play in wherever you play, you're supposed to file your handicap. So, you know, you file your scores because that affects what your handicap index is. And these guys are very faithful about wherever they play, they put in their scores. So they managed to sync up these corporate business trips almost to coincide, and they were able to show these guys playing golf and the days they and the courses they played at in the towns where they were having these great business meetings, which were almost all in Florida in the wintertime, oddly enough. It was a very embarrassing article for a lot of these guys. They had to apologize. They had to pay back their company for the jet time. It's a big jet trip, like from Chicago to Vero Beach and back on a G5. That ain't cheap. I don't care how much you win on the course. That's about a $40,000 ride right there, maybe more. And so these guys all had to write checks to their corporations apologizing. Oh, I guess we forgot. We might have played golf on that trip. Yeah, that was the whole reason for them playing. So consequently, they're very, very good. And as you might imagine, I don't get invited on any of those foursomes or any of those trips. And it's probably a good thing. I think the writers should be, I will tell you, I've heard a couple other writers who golf. John Updike is a fanatic golfer, apparently. And Cormac McCarthy is a big golfer, from what I understand. Now, that's something to think about. That guy, you know, that guy from the movie with the guy with the creepy Jackson Brown haircut, the guy, the killer guy. Yeah, I mean, that guy is that. The guy who created him is out on the golf course. It's kind of intriguing. I'm going to talk just a little bit about wildlife on the golf course, because I had a couple of slips during the 32 years that I wasn't playing, and one of the slips occurred in Barbados, and the two of the slips had nothing to do with golf in a conventional sense of the word golfing. I mean, I was using the clubs, but not for reasons prescribed by the manufacturer. But in this case, I was sent to Barbados on a very difficult magazine assignment, which was to write about this Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. Terry McDonald had called me and said, we'd like a piece of funny satirical fiction to put in the magazine, which is, is famous for its fine literature. That issue, everybody buys that issue for the fiction. I said, are you kidding? Nobody reads the swimsuit edition. He says, no, we always put something like this in. I said, well, you basically want some filler, don't you, between the pictures. And he wouldn't call it that. He said, look, go down. We need you to go down there. Just hang out for a couple days while we're having the modeling shoot. We need you to write something funny about it, write 3,000 funny words or something about it. And I said, this is something that almost never happens to Terry when he's discussing the swimsuit issue with a prospective writer, and that's it. I'll have to think about it. He goes, what? I said, I have to think about this. And what I was thinking about was how I was going to convince my wife that this is a legitimate journalism assignment in any sense, because there's no way to put Barbados and swimsuit models in the same sentence and have it. That's not going to fly. So I said to Terry, I called him back, I said, I can't do this unless I can bring my wife. And he said, fine, bring your wife. So fine, she goes, and I brought up, our son was very small at the time. So I'm on the beach doing my thing, taking notes, watching all this stuff happen. And I noticed in the entourage, one guy, Sports Illustrated entourage, has brought his golf clubs. And it turns out he's the editor of this issue, Bob Rowe, and he said, I've done this every year for years, and honestly, I ain't that thrilled by the whole thing anymore. I'd play, and every afternoon he would disappear to play golf. And he kept asking me to play. And I said, you don't understand. I haven't touched a club in 30 plus years, and I'm not going with you. I'd love to. Thanks for the invitation. I'm not going. says, you gotta come. So I kept saying, no, no, no. And finally, he says to me, look, you gotta come. There's monkeys on the golf course. Monkeys on the golf course. And I'm thinking to myself, golf has changed so much. We never had monkeys on the golf course when I played. And I said, what do you mean monkeys? And he said, I'm telling you, there's monkeys running amok on this golf course. There's wild monkeys. You gotta come. So I said, I'm there. Monkey golf is too good to pass up. So next afternoon, I go out with Bob to this course. It's Sandy Lane, a big resort down there. And apparently famous for monkeys. But so we start playing. He rents me some clubs, I should say. The shareholders of Time Warner. And off I go. And the first nine is not a bloodbath. It's not as bad as I thought. I hit a couple decent shots. Back nine, I go to pieces because I haven't played in forever. And at one point, the caddy even runs up to me. I have a three wood in my hand, fairway wood. He runs up and snatches it away from me. He says, you will never be allowed to use this club again. And he runs back to the car. That's how bad things are going. I didn't even care about that because it was, for me, this was a one-time deal. I told myself I'm never going to play again. Well, who cares? But the thing I was really pissed off about, there's no monkeys. You play every hole. All I'm doing is looking for monkeys. And believe me, I was in the woods. I would have seen a monkey. I was everywhere in this place. No monkeys. And I keep complaining bitterly to Bob about this. I said, this is false advertising. You told me there would be monkeys out here. And he goes, they were all over yesterday. I'm like, yeah, that's what they always say, isn't it? So we finally reach the 14th, 15th tee. And anyway, there's a huge commotion in the tree overhead. And I look up. And the caddy, who's all vindicated now, says, see the monkey. I could have been anything. It could have been a big squirrel. It could have been a feral cat. I don't know. So I humor the guy. I said, yeah, that's your monkey. Huh? That's the best you can do. Fine. That's a monkey. You go off to play the hole. Bob hits a couple good shots. He's on the green. He's putting. He's got about an 8-foot putt for birdie. And I'm standing on the green waiting for my turn. I look down the fairway, and there's this magnificent sight. This monkey is running towards us down the middle of the fairway on his knuckles with his tail held up. Big male monkey coming right at us. I mean, thundering down the fairway. I couldn't be happier. And so I momentarily forgot the etiquette of golf, which is that you never make a sound when your partner is putting. So Bob takes the putter back, putting for his birdie, and I blurt out words to the effect of, look at that freaking monkey. I said it very loud. So loud that the monkey stops in his tracks and tears up a tree, and Bob misses the putt. He misses the birdie putt. I feel horrible. I feel wretched about this. If you're a hacker like me, you don't get a lot of birdie putts. And now I've done this to Bob, and I said, look, I don't know what the USGA rules are on monkey incidents, but please, you got to try the putt again. This is not something that Tiger would ever have to deal with. No one on the PGA Tour is going to yell out and start screaming about a monkey. So he tries the putt again. He misses it. I said, please, one more time. You can make this putt. Yeah, I will not live with my... I will be burdened with Catholic guilt, Norwegian guilt, all the kinds of guilt that I have to go through life with if you don't sink this damn putt. Misses it again. And he just taps it in for his par. He was so gracious about it. So gracious. And we finished the rest of the round. No other monkey even shows his monkey butt the whole time. But the worst thing that happens to me is this. On the very last hole, I par the last hole. That's the worst thing that could have ever happened to me. And I do it, and there's a big veranda, and all the tourists are out there sipping rum drinks. They're sloshed, and they're all watching while you play. So it's the worst possible scenario for somebody like me. And I somehow par the hole. And I walk off the green with this idea embedded way, way back in my brain that someday I can do this. That's not so hard. I parted in front of all these Googans up here drinking. So I can do it under any circumstance. And then you carry that thought with you, and it never leaves you. And then this happens. This is what happens. You get right back into it again. And I have no excuses or alibis, but that's sort of the story of where I ended up, where I am with this thing. So I think it's time for questions now. Oh, no.